Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun in studio. Bob, were you...
Oh, was hesitating on whether to say one take because he doesn't show up for, like, the one hit. He's gone for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He could probably hustle back and be part of the group here, but...
Wow.
I could hustle back, but I don't want to jump in mid-segment. Don't you think that's a weird flow?
That's fine.
We had something going anyway.
It's all good, man. We were talking UFC, actually.
I heard you. I was in my truck.
That was strategic.
So you were in your truck?
Yeah, I drive down to Studio 6.
Yeah, he drives. Drives.
Anyway. Hi, Pierre. We haven't seen
how
you
many
in a while.
Steps it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, the drives.
I just find it easier. I drive right down. I park. It's just right in there, out, boom, drive back.
Listening to the show on the way.
I listen
doesn't
to
miss
the...
anything that way.
It's amazing, isn't it? Hey, Pierre, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How you doing? How you feeling after your whole Leafs lunch?
Traumatic. That was borderline torture, wearing an Eagles jersey for two hours.
Big Cowboy fan.
But I'm getting over it. No, that was difficult.
Well,
I'm not going to lie.
I'm glad you
I feel dumber after doing it for 2 hours.
You should. Dumber.
You should. I'm glad you guys are in here because I was watching you on Leafs Lunch today, and you guys were getting into the whole offer sheet stuff.
Yeah.
What provoked this? Like, why are people freaking out about offer sheets with the Maple Leafs? Why is it exclusively a Maple Leaf conversation as well? Couldn't Patrick Laine be in that conversation? I mean,
no question.
What's up with this? Why is today the big day to be...
Well, it's not the big day. It's been out there for three
Leafs
or four
lunch.
Weeks.
Because it's a Toronto radio station and doesn't give a damn about anything other than the Leafs, apparently.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's because DeAndre's still unsigned, and he's the biggest player left that's unsigned. No offense to Nick Ritchie. And the Leafs, at some point, are going to be in a precarious salary cap position. They aren't now. I mean, I honestly think any team is wasting their time doing an offer sheet on Nylander right now. What I was trying to say today with Andy Petrullo and Gordon Miller is that the time to make the Leafs nervous, if you were a team that were willing to go down that path, next would be year. If Austin Matthews is still unsigned on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
You throw $50 million a year down at him and see what
happens. They're going to match that, too. They're not...
They may. They won't be happy about it. They will for sure match it.
Yeah. But... I think they would match anything with him. You can't let him walk out the door. You can't. Like, I don't care what the price is. He cannot go anywhere.
Yeah. Which is why I think he'll be signed before then.
Yeah. And then that's... on his group as well to acknowledge that, wouldn't it be? I mean,
and again, I don't even know why we're talking about this other than you asked, which is the way these things usually start. And then I'm going to talk about it.
And then we get radioed.
And then Joe over there is going to take me something I said here. Yeah. And Bob McKenzie says, offer sheet coming for.
Don't do it, Al. Don't do it, Al.
But in any case, I mean, if you're the Arizona Coyotes, why wouldn't you? Like, you know. Whatever it costs. And I know everybody says they have no money this and no money that, but why wouldn't you do anything possible to get a hometown boy in your lineup? Mm-hmm. And I mean, if he'd been born on September 15th instead of September 17th, he would have been a Coyote right now.
Yeah, we brought that up earlier.
Yeah.
Like, looking back on the
48
draft,
hours.
McDavid was going one.
Was going one and Eichel was going two.
You think Eichel
I think Eichel would have gone two. The consensus... What I remember at the World Junior that year was that Eichel was ahead of Matthews. And at the World Juniors, it played that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a year younger. But Eichel was really good. And I think if that draft unfolded, if Matthews had been born on September 15th, it would have gone McDavid, Eichel. Arizona would have taken Matthews at three. And the Leafs would have taken Marner at four. And Dylan Strome would have fell to wherever.
Right. Oh, you think Marner still would have gone fourth?
Yeah.
Strome actually scored last night.
Yeah.
Nice of him to make an appearance.
The Leafs were taking Marner no matter what.
Well, right. With Mark Hunter involved, that was, yeah.
Which turns out to be the right move in retrospect.
I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's worked out pretty
especially
well.
Especially if you consider that was a debate Noah Hanifin as a potential option there.
Yeah, Hanifin went five.
There's a lot of talk about taking Hanifin.
Yeah.
And then Werenski ended up going ahead of him anyways. Yeah. Not ahead of him, but...
Provorov was in that draft too,
great
wasn't
defenseman
he?
Draft.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Very good draft.
Well, our boy Ray, we've been talking about his whole Twitter spat today because people have been disappointed with Ray in Edmonton in particular because he had the audacity to suggest that Matthews was in the same stratosphere as McDavid. But when you consider what Matthews has done, I mean, the whole team had so much hype, partially because of the market, but you signed Tavares and... coming off 105 points. But what you've seen out of Matthews through four games, well, I think we all collectively agreed we expected him to be a monster. But is he exceeding your expectations?
Well, I think the first thing you notice was he's quicker. He's improved his skating. Looks like he's improved his shot. I'm not sure I'm necessarily surprised. You know, really, just because you're elite doesn't mean you can't get better. And the same will go for, I would assume the same will go for McDavid. I watched the one, you know, it's nice that the Oilers are finally playing a game tonight. And we'll get McDavid out of witness protection here.
What a butcher job by the league. I mean,
we're like, the season started a week ago Wednesday. It's like a week and a half. McDavid's played one game. It was in Europe.
At one.
On a Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard or seen from him since then. And he's the face of the game. And
that's a miss.
And, it feels like a
and I assume night, that I assume he's better than he was last year. The one game I saw, I've never seen anything so fast in my life.
Mm-hmm. You know, going back to Matthews, though, what's going to be a byproduct, I believe, of people watching his season, all the work that he does with Daryl Belfry and the summer camp. Patrick Kane's a big Belfry guy.
Yep.
And then I've talked to Mark Scheifele about this last spring during the Jets playoff run, the work that Scheifele and Wheeler do with Adam Oates. This whole specialized coaching and finding that extra layer of offensive gear, I think we're just scratching the surface. Yep. I think this thing is the next whole layer. And it's going to be an issue. You know, the Jets have decided to embrace it. The Jets went to Scheifele and Wheeler finally and said, you know what? Just stay open with us and let's communicate about it. And they're A-OK with the Adam Oates thing. Other teams weren't at the beginning, as you remember. But this is where it's all at now.
It's the players catching up with the goalies. Goalies were doing that for many years, like specialized goaltending, studying players. And that's where there was a layer of about 3 or 4 years where you saw the goalies were kind of ahead of the shooters. Now that's not the case because now you're seeing the specialized shooters camps and stuff where they're picking apart goaltenders. Now I've seen and spoke to a shooting coach out of Vancouver who works with Pavelski. They talk about release, where the goaltender will be in certain situations. They're studying goaltenders now, and they're not even looking at the net. It's about getting it away at certain spots.
What about how much money these guys are going to make from the secondary level? Like, there's probably Toronto parents that are saying, oh, who's this guy that's teaching Austin Matthews about a shot? Yeah. My kid's going to go see him or his understudy or whoever, and they'll pay a fortune.
Yeah, they will.
And there have been guys doing it for a long time. I mean, Steven Stamkos was going to Yari Burski from the time he was, you know, 9, 10 years old.
He's been in Toronto forever, hasn't he?
Who, Yari?
Yeah, hasn't he been here for a long time?
Worked with Brent Burns as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Never heard of that guy.
Yari. There were a bunch of guys in Toronto that had their, like, specialized camps.
And Yari's a beauty.
Yeah.
He does, like, well, the Tampa Bay Lightning hire him, the Ottawa Senators. He does their prospect camps and what have you, but he's a piece of work.
Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun in studio. With William Nylander, I heard you guys talking about it today, that, you know, no one knows when this is going to end, but is there a chance, like, that there is something premeditated here? Like, they've got a pretty good idea of when this is going to come to an end? Like, that they're, because Noodles, you've referenced this cap-friendly piece a lot, where, like, the later it goes, you can front-load the contract.
Yes, that's true. The later you sign, the bigger the cap hit is this year, and the less it is in future years. But I don't believe for a moment that's a strategy on the part of the Leafs.
No.
That they're actually happy. They want Nylander back in the lineup, but they want him back at their number, not Nylander's number. And I think there's a genuine rift here in terms of how big a gulf there is, both on long-term and short-term deals. And I don't know how they're going to bridge it, and I don't know when it's going to end. And I don't even know what to say about it anymore. Because I just think the difference is so vast right now that I don't know what's the trigger point for one side or the other saying, yeah, you know what, I've taken a stand here, but I'm feeling different about it now. Mm-hmm, yeah. I don't see one.
Be interesting to talk to a guy like Trouba in Winnipeg, where I think he was trying to make a stand too, and then just, you get to a point where it's just, no, I'm not taking that stand anymore.
Smaller level, though. I mean,
took a bridge, though, too, didn't he?
Athanasiu was speaking about Nylander. Yeah, I don't know if
he wasn't
saw
threatening
that.
Anybody.
I'm just saying, smaller level, but still, he was talking about what he went through and his experience. today about William Nylander. Like he said, hey, it's a business, and I got it. There was no hard feelings when it got done. I talked to my agent. I followed the team. And he did say, you stay in shape. And he goes, I think within 2 weeks, William Nylander will be fine. Like he goes,
I don't think there's an issue there.
Yeah.
Athanasius was, they were at loggerheads over 200K. You know, Nylander at the least might be 2 million.
Right.
You know, or thereabouts.
Bit of a different
casual. By the time it's all said and done. So I'm just at a loss to figure out what's going to be the mechanism that pushes these two sides together. Is it December 1st? Is that it?
Well, that has to be it, right? Because he's not playing beyond that.
No, exactly.
But to your question about whether either side feels there's a predetermined window, I don't see it at all. No. Because as little as both sides are communicating with any of us, I can tell you I sense a frustration rising with each side.
Who gets the hate on quicker? Does the player and the agent get the hate on, or is it equal?
It's equal, I think.
Should mention a little breaking news here, too, that the NHLPA just put out a statement saying Austin Watson's 27-game suspension has been reduced to 18 games by the neutral arbitrator. So quite a significant
kind of cut it in by
reduction.
Third, right?
And
cut it by
really
third,
with
yeah.
That's
no
go over really pre, well.
Nothing for the arbitrator to go on as far as precedent NHL-wise.
No, right. Because it's a unique one. For those who don't know, Austin Watson this summer pleaded no contest to a charge of misdemeanor domestic assault, and the league subsequently suspended him for 27 games. So, and it was 2 weeks ago Wednesday that the independent arbitrator held the appeal, and we thought there was going to be an announcement as early as Wednesday, but the arbitrator needed some more documentation. Thought it was going to carry over to next week, but obviously it's come out today. So 27 down to, you said, 18, Pierre?
18, yeah.
18 games.
And obviously this being a hot-button topic, not in hockey, but in society.
Yeah.
There'll be...
backlash.
There'll be a big backlash on this one, and maybe rightfully so.
And it'll be interesting. I was just communicating with someone in the NHL. Not sure whether the league itself will respond tonight, but... the league never likes its own suspensions reduced, let's be honest. They weren't happy when Weidman's suspension was
20
reduced.
20 to 10.
So at some point in the next 24 to 48 hours, I suspect we'll hear from the league in one way or another. But it'll be interesting, to be honest, again, because everything Bob just covered, this is unprecedented territory.
Yep.
And how the league handles its public response here will be interesting. Because there's no doubt they'd be disappointed. But how will they put that into words, given everything that's at play here?
Well, I mean, they kind of have a cushion here with it being an independent arbitrator, don't they? Like,
well,
can't
yes.
they just say, "Sort, what do you want us
yeah,
to do?
They can, but they can express in no uncertain terms how unhappy they are. And what used to happen in the old days, whenever there was an independent arbitrator used, if one side or the other, the PA or the NHL, lost a grievance arbitration, there's always, I think there's usually a poison pill in there where they can gas the arbitrator.
Yeah.
And that usually happened after those things where if a ruling went against the PA, quite often they'd say, okay, next arbitrator up, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because they both have to agree on who it is.
And the Predators just essentially put out a non-statement right now saying that they were not involved in the appeal. And as they said before, their focus is on continuing to be the health and well-being of Austin Watson and his family. So they're...
right.
They're neutral in this, but it is tough.
Which they kind of have to be.
You can't say anything.
And in the backdrop of this, now that the Austin Watson situation is clarified in terms of how many games he'll miss and what the NHL's position on it was, you've got Slava Voynov waiting in the wings. Slava Voynov has made it known to the National Hockey League dating back to June, I believe, that he wants to come back to the National Hockey League.
Would it be with Los Angeles?
No, I don't think the Kings have interest in bringing him back. But
they would have to trade his rights, I guess, basically.
Yeah, they would have to trade his rights. And it obviously gets very complicated. In Slava Voynov's case, and again, I'm not one to try and put gradients on domestic abuse in any way, shape, or form, but if you were to compare the two police reports, there's a huge difference between the two.
Right.
In terms of the damage that was inflicted. But in any case, so Voynov, you know, he ran afoul of immigration authorities mm-hmm. and whatever because of the charges. He went back and he played in the KHL. He's indicated he wants to come back to the National Hockey League. I believe he met with Gary Bettman earlier in the summer. I'm not 100% positive on that. But in any case, either he or his representatives met with the league, and the league basically said, you can apply to come back, but understand that there's going to be a suspension. There's going to be discipline handed down because we don't feel like we ever dealt with your situation, and they didn't. And I think Voinoff and his representatives were hoping he would get time served. Time served, though, you know, going to play in the KHL and being paid millions of dollars to play in the KHL right. just because you couldn't play in the NHL, that doesn't mean you suffered a penalty
right.
in the eyes of the National Hockey League. So the league has had discussions, and the sense we got is that if Voinoff were to return, he could be looking at 60 to 80 game and maybe a full year suspension, which might chill the marketplace for anybody that wants to bring him back.
Right,
but
right.
it's interesting, this arbitrator's decision taking 27 down to 18, what impact might that have on the NHL in terms of the way they rule on Voinoff? I don't know.
Because right. we had heard the June draft, Bob, you and I and Dregs, that there were teams inquiring about Voinoff.
Big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, at the end of the day, there's a guy who was a top four right-hand defenseman on the Stanley Cup champion Kings, but obviously balancing the hit PR-wise that they would take as an organization to take on a guy with that kind of charge on him.
That's that's the moral dilemma.
It's just
right?
not kosher. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, absolutely. Well, there's a, you know, and I'd be curious to see what team it is or what teams, but we were led to believe there were multiple teams that mm-hmm. had expressed interest.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, look what's going on in baseball right now.
Yeah.
Houston, they said we're, you know, one strike and you're out, then all of a sudden they didn't have a closer and Roberto Osuna was available.
Yep.
And now, bit different because the charges were eventually dropped, where Voinov, I don't think there's much disputing it
right.
in terms of what he was all about, why he took off, but Houston's in the ALCS. And I think they might win another World Series. And guess who's going to be in the clubhouse party? And guess who's going to be on the streets partying with the team after they win? The fans. Not saying it's right or wrong, but teams right. eventually get to a point where they think, you know what, we can get through this wave.
And I'm not suggesting that Slava Voinov should never be allowed to play in the NHL again, but what I will tell you is if I was an owner of an NHL team, I'm not sure I want to be the team that opens a door up.
Bites the bullet.
I'm sorry if that makes me selfish or self-conscious or whatever, but to me it sends a wrong message to my fan base that I'm okay with it.
We see it, and we've seen it on a different level with Kaepernick. Regardless, I'm not talking about domestic, but I'm just saying if you may be perceived as something that would not be good for your organization, people
shy away from it. It's all about brand, right? It's all about brand.
And that's totally different. You know, situations that, but it's more about teams just don't want that, and it's a moral issue. And personally, like Voinoff is a guy who is a terrific player, but that is an awful thing that he did, and I don't think people want that.
It's so layered and complex, and yet there are people out there that say it shouldn't be. That you know that if you're guilty of a heinous act as Voinoff was, that you know that means you forfeit your right to earn a living in the National Hockey League. And I to some degree, I understand that, but I also think, I mean, murderers get out of prison after a while. And, you know, is that wrong? Is that right? People can have that discussion all day. I think one of the important things is that it's not just a matter of punishment. If you just punish somebody, you know, what you want to do is you want to punish them for sure, but you also want to try to rehabilitate and make the person understand. And that's where it gets into a nuanced thing of, you know, and it's interesting. And again, people will say this is complex too, but Voinoff is still happily married. And people say, well, that's, you know, that's not unusual in these situations. And I understand all that. But, you know, do you want this person to, you know, to be rehabilitated, to understand what they did was so heinous, but there needs to be a huge punishment, but there also needs to be, and I think it, you know, this on a much lower level, sometimes you get a player who makes a homophobic or a racial slur and everybody wants them suspended. Great, I say, sure, suspend them, fine them, do whatever, but try to make sure they understand what they did, why it was wrong, and so that it does never happen again. Mm-hmm. And it goes without saying that domestic abuse, you don't need to explain why it's wrong. It is. But you want that person to have a better understanding of what they did, why they did it, and why it should never, ever happen again if that person's going to be part of your league.
And, right. And to a certain degree, every other teammate and player in the league.
Education.
That the message is beyond the player involved, but everyone.
Yeah.
Well, the other complicated thing here with Voinov is we haven't heard from him. We're assuming contrition, but I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's another
those
problem.
Are the things that you need to... That, you know, that's got to be all part and parcel of it, too.
Because if he comes in, he's like, I'm not apologizing. I don't think I did anything wrong. Yeah. Well, then what the hell do you do? Then you got a bigger problem.
Now, and as I said, the Kings, I don't believe the Kings have any interest whatsoever in Voinov as a hockey player on their team right now, other than to perhaps facilitate to get him back into the league and move him on somewhere. But there are those within the Kings organization that believe that everything that needs to happen in one of these situations is happening, that he is on the right track and that he does understand and that, you know, they've gone through counseling or whatever the case may be. So I don't know. There's no easy answers here. And I know the default position for a lot of people simply is, well, wash your hands of anybody who does that. Fair enough. You know, on one level, I understand that. On another level, I think everybody deserves a second chance. At some point, if they've gone through a really rigorous process.
Besides, I can't think of a team that needs a top four right-hand defenseman anyway.
No, never.
It's not
those guys. Only about 12 they grow teams on trees everywhere. Like,
it is.
Yeah. All right, Leafs Wings tonight. We'll catch you guys later. Thanks for popping in, both of you.
Thanks, guys.
Here's Bob McKenzie and Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insiders.